This portion of Your Talk Show is sponsored by Mercy Health, a passion for making lives better. Your community, your opinions, your forum. This is Your Talk Show on News Radio 1230 WCLO. The opinions expressed by Your Talk Show hosts do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the station or Bliss Communications. The open line phone number is 752-4000. Please remember that all calls will be live on the air. Now, here's the host of Your Talk Show, Tim Bremmel.
All right, welcome back. Is it still cloudy outside?
It is very cloudy. It's a 20-degree difference from yesterday.
But it is windy. Yeah, so if I had solar panels on my roof, that may not be working so well today. But if I had a windmill in the back of my yard, it would be working pretty well as it relates to energy. And we want to talk about energy. And again, we started down this road of looking at this topic shortly after President Trump issued the orders that changed the EPA standards in places, rolled back the automobile emissions and things like that. And it takes us back into that energy discussion. And I think it's I think it's as equally important of a national policy discussion as many other things, arguably maybe more in some cases, that right now is not getting any discussion at all. So we said, you know what, we're still going to go with it, even though the national media is all askew with other stuff. So we welcome to the program a gentleman who, I must tell you, Norman Rogers, when Tom brought this to me, I said, right from the get-go, I got a problem with the title Dumb Energy, because it seems to presume that anybody that likes the idea of renewables is dumb, and I don't like to call my listeners dumb. So let's start from that. You make a case that, at least on a nationwide basis, thinking that we can somehow someday get to all renewables is probably not practical. But what about the guy who just wants to say, you know what? I figured it out, and over 15 years, I'll get some payback on it, and I want to put solar panels on my roof.
Well, Tom, people who put solar panels on the roof aren't necessarily dumb, but it is very poor public policy. Yeah, they may save money, but they're saving money at the expense of everyone else who's paying for their electricity and who's paying for the backup plants that provide electricity when their solar's not working.
And that would be perhaps a day like today, and I realize that there's certain storage systems and things like that as it relates to some of these renewable energies. I know that California, I don't know if it's passed legislation or proposed legislation, but they are looking at being on what they would call 100% renewables, and that's a combination of solar, wind, and I don't know if ocean's involved in that or not, in the next decade, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's impossible to go 100% wind on solar, because sometimes they don't work. You know, if you went 100% wind on solar, you'd have blackouts every couple of days. California, the way they get around that intermittency of the wind and solar is they have a thing called a renewable energy certificate. So they will say a wind plant in Colorado will generate wind electricity, and they'll sell these renewable energy certificates to Colorado, to California, and then the California say, well, we're using that renewable energy that's been allocated to us, that renewable energy from Colorado, even though it doesn't actually flow to California. So they can say they're using 100% renewable energy when they're actually using energy from natural gas. It's kind of a scam.
So they're basically going to, if I understand what you're saying, they could take credit for renewables in other area and use that to offset non-renewables that they're still using.
Exactly.
All right. Well,
exactly.
That then is kind of just a misnomer as to how they would approach that. But talk about national energy policy. When we talk about national energy policy, we have a giant, well, there's several things, obviously. There's the price of gasoline, which we all need to commute to work. But we have a giant electrical grid. And we right here in southern Wisconsin have a utility investing mega dollars in a solar generation plant.
Yeah, well, it really is a waste of money. The reason the utilities love to invest in solar plants is because they have a thing called their rate base, which is the amount of capital equipment they own that hasn't been depreciated. And that's how their profits are calculated. So they're quite happy to build a solar plant that is basically useless, or to retire a perfectly good plant and build a new plant, because it allows them to make more money. And it's really up to the public utility commissions of the states to restrain them from this type of behavior. But utility commissions are getting pressure from the Sierra Club and all the green energy people saying, oh, we've got to have wind and solar. The whole thing is kind of pulling the wool over the eyes of the public, and it's increasing the cost of energy by a lot.
What evidence do we have, Norm, that we couldn't, with the technologies today, you know, other than some speculation? I am vaguely aware, at least. I don't have solar on my house, so I can't speak from firsthand experience. But basically, in a typical weather pattern type of thing, you can endure a cloudy day, or perhaps two now, because you have storage batteries that reserve this and come online, and you deplete them when the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing, if you want to talk about wind energy. And ultimately, we are moving towards a point where this would seem to be viable, and particularly the question being, well, if I can do that and offset at least some of the smoke and emissions I got to belch into the air by running traditional, you know, fossil fuel powered plants, why is that being talked down?
Well, Tim, if there were a method of storing the electricity that was cheap and available, you'd be completely correct. But the only methods of storing electricity that are available are way too expensive. The cheapest method of storing electricity is something called pump storage, where you have two reservoirs at different altitudes in the mountains, and you store energy by pumping water to the upper reservoir, and then you let it run down through a turbine to the lower reservoir, and that's a way of storing energy. But that's quite expensive. You got to build a whole hydroelectric plant. You have to have mountains, which I'm sure you don't really have in Wisconsin, right?
Not too many.
You do have water, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you got a lot of water.
Out here in Nevada, we don't have water. Batteries are unbelievably expensive. Now, if you just want a battery to tide you over for 2 hours, that you maybe can do that. But if you're going to have a battery to tide you over to the biggest dry spell you would get in the solar or the wind, it's going to cost you a huge amount of money. Now, Texas has a huge wind energy system, very big.
Mm-hmm.
And they have available the hourly output for every hour in 2017 or 2016. And I ran a simulation to see how big a battery would be required to smooth that out. And it turned out the battery cost about 10 or 15 times as much as all those windmills cost. It's just unbelievably expensive. It's just not practical. The only way to back up the wind and solar, which is very intermittent, is to have a natural gas plant working in tandem with it. So whenever the wind or solar goes down, the natural gas generation goes up.
So from that statement, you're not completely against the idea of a sort of a multi-pronged approach here then. You're just saying that our idea that we could rely on this one day is not practical?
Well, no, we can't rely on it, but I'm against it because it's not remotely economic. Because you have to build two plants. You have to have a gas plant, which could handle the whole load, and you don't even need the wind and solar. And then you add the wind and solar, so you've built two systems. Now, the only thing the wind and solar really does is an addition to the grid, and it saves a little bit of fuel. Whenever the wind or solar is working, you can throttle back the gas plant and you save some gas.
Right.
But that's 2 cents a kilowatt hour. It's a trivial saving. It doesn't really justify the cost of the wind or solar plants, which, you know, to generate electricity with wind or solar once you strip out all the subsidies, of which there are many, it costs about 7 cents a kilowatt hour, and it's worth about 2 cents a kilowatt hour in fuel saved. So if you work the numbers, utility-scale wind or solar is 70% subsidized. And the people who subsidize it, is that you have all these federal subsidies, and then you have, in addition, higher electric rates.
But don't we also have subsidies in the gas and oil industry?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're really certain, it seems to me, you could be simply talking about a difference of volume, that right now, because the generation is so much based on non-renewables, that, yes, the efficiency cost and the cost of operation is down. If we flipped that tomorrow, subsidies out of it on both sides of the equation, is it not possible that we would notice the same sort of economic benefits the other way without the subsidies involved?
Okay, the subsidies on the fossil fuel industry, the Congressional Research Service has written a paper on this, and they say the subsidies, it's questionable whether they're subsidies, they're different tax incentives, amounts to $5 billion a year, which is trivial in the context of the whole fossil fuel industry, which is hundreds of billions of dollars a year. On the other hand, in the renewable energy industry, which is very small compared to the fossil fuel industry, like I said, the subsidy is basically 70% for utility-scale solar. It is billions of dollars a year, and it's a direct subsidy. For instance, in wind, there's 2.4 cents per kilowatt hour that the government pays to the people who are generating wind power. So you have the ridiculous situation in the Pacific Northwest in the spring when they have a lot of hydropower. They don't really need the wind power, but the wind power guys, they say, we got to sell our power because we want to get the subsidy. We can't get the subsidy unless we sell our power. So they actually pay people to take the power. They have a negative electricity rate.
So we're talking about, on one hand, the corporate relationship with the government programs that incentivize the development of all these energies, versus what the end user consumer sees. Is that so? In a case of a subsidized wind operation, the consumer is not seeing the actual cost of production because of the government subsidy. Is that what you're saying to me?
Oh yeah, yeah. If you look at the propaganda the wind industry puts out to say, oh well, we're producing wind energy now for 3 cents or 4 cents or 5 cents a kilowatt hour, but they neglect to mention all these subsidies. And all, it's not just subsidies, there's special privileges. For instance, the wind and solar guys, they have priority in the electric grid. The operators of the electric grid have to take everything they shove at them.
But again, isn't that ultimately positive? If I mean, I realize we may be talking fractions here, Norman, but what's to say that it's a bad thing if we cut 3% off of the amount of emissions because we're not running the plants at full steam anymore?
Okay, if you want to justify spending all this money to cut the carbon dioxide emissions, the answer to that is there's a lot of other ways to cut carbon dioxide emissions besides building wind turbines. For example, the cost of cutting carbon dioxide emissions with the wind or the solar is about $140 per ton of CO2 emitted. That's called a carbon offset when you emit one ton of CO2. Mm-hmm. But you can buy a carbon offset for $10. That's what Al Gore buys when he flies the jet around.
And so you're going to have to dig a little deeper into that for most of us, Norman, because I hear about it. We hear about carbon tax proposals and things like that from time to time. Go ahead.
A carbon offset means that you're removing the emissions of one metric ton of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Now, there are companies that are in the business, they say, I'll sell you a carbon offset, and the way they're removing the CO2, they may be planting trees or something like that, and the trees absorb the CO2.
Okay.
Or they may do something else that results in less. They may even be running a wind farm. Or a nuclear reactor, but somehow or other they're reducing the emissions of CO2, and they sell you that right, that, you know, for $10 or whatever it is. The real method, if you really believe in global warming, you're really worried about carbon emissions, what the government should be doing is doing nuclear power, because nuclear power doesn't emit carbon, and it's good power. It's not like wind that's intermittent or solar that goes away every night. But the people who are promoting wind and solar, right, are the green people. They hate nuclear.
which is always a little conundrum for me. I understand its potential negative implication in the event of a tragedy, which there have been very limited amounts of, but they have happened. But again, as you're looking at this from certainly a nationwide perspective, you're not saying you're against innovating and changing things. That might eliminate the use of a lot of oil or gas and coal. You're just basically suggesting that there are smarter ways to do it than the way we're approaching it now. Am I characterizing that right?
Well, I think there are smarter ways than doing wind and solar. I don't necessarily believe that we're facing a global warming catastrophe. I think the science on that is very weak. But even if you do think that's we're facing such a catastrophe, wind and solar is not the right way to go about preventing the catastrophe.
All right. Well, it's interesting to talk about, Norman. I know that this is going to be an ages-old battle of lines of thinking here. To folks in our listening audience right now that may think that Norm is full of hot air, and he's been bought off by the oil companies or something like that. What do you have to say to people that are staunch advocates of these kinds of technologies?
Well, I have to say that I'm sorry that they're true believers in something that's just wrong, but and I say the numbers don't lie. That's all I can say. I think people have been victims of propaganda put out by special interests, and the special interests are the people who make the wind turbines, the special interests in the environmental groups that make their money by, predicting that catastrophe, and also academics who are in the whole wind energy academic world, wind and solar. So there are a lot of people that have a real stake in this movement, but and the politicians that go for it because there are a very vocal minority that says wind and solar is great, it's the future, it's going to replace everything, all the fossil fuels. That's a vocal minority, and politicians, they don't like to. As long as it's not pushback, they'll go along with the. Yeah. The minority of crazy people.
although to be fair, Norman, I mean, there's a lot of people with a stake in the more traditional energy sources as well, that would have the same financial incentive basically to push that agenda.
That's true. For instance, coal miners. I think that the problem is that the people on the other side, like the coal miners, for example, or oil field workers, they're not as well organized as the environmentalists are, and their voice doesn't really get heard. It's kind of unfortunate, I think. We have this great, for instance, with coal, we have this tremendous resource. We're practically, this country is practically floating on coal. We have so much coal, it'll last forever. And it's not being utilized because it's been under sustained attack for many years. It's very clean, by the way.
Well, and I do know I've gone through not an unlimited number of hours in a day. When we talk about this subject, I do go through, and the EPA has the data that shows that coal plants are much cleaner now and have been getting cleaner. So I believe you in that regard, and this idea that that they are belching as much CO2 and emissions that you know maybe they did 40 years ago, but it's drastically different now, and there is evidence out there that you can find to prove that. I had a caller here that wanted to know what your thoughts are as it relates to geothermal as another alternative energy source.
Sure. Well, geothermal is a good source of energy in California. There's a place in Northern California called the Geysers, where if you actually go there, there's a valley with steam coming up out of the ground every place, and they have wells. They get high pressure steam out of, and they run turbines. So there's nothing wrong with geothermal. It's just that it's a very limited resource. It's only economical in certain parts of the country where there's some volcanic action close to the surface.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well. Some interesting data there you are able to throw on this constant fire of discussion. Do you think we'll ever be able to come to a consensus in this country one way or the other about what's the smartest way to move forward? Because ultimately that's what the politicians are charged with doing.
Yeah, I think that wind and solar will die of its own, you know, it'll just die out. People get bored with it. And you know, they're some people don't remember back in the 70s we had a wind and solar movement. And if you go by Palm Springs, California, there's a whole ghost towns of old wind turbines that have been abandoned because it just never worked out. And after the oil crisis we had at that time went away, it just kind of faded away.
Americans will still gravitate, by and large, to the cheaper source of energy regardless of what some of the other benefits are out there, won't they?
Well, that's a powerful incentive. Money drives the world, right?
And as you just point out, I mean, exactly. After gas prices came back down and the pressure came off of the oil crisis of the 70s, that whole idea of paying more for it didn't resonate with the American people, and that's why you have the ghost town of wind turbines that you just mentioned.
Yeah, and you know, the oil and gas industry has invented this new method of extracting oil and gas called fracking, and the U.S. is almost self-sufficient now in oil and gas. Mm-hmm. We used to be importing a great percentage of it, and we're importing very little now.
That's true. That's been another economic upturn that, again, that had stalled for a while here. But now as oil prices are back on the rise, that seems to be recovering as well. It's certainly a complex issue to talk about, and I appreciate your insights this morning, Norm.
You betcha.
All right, Norm Rogers. The book is Dumb Energy, if you want to read it, or dumbenergy.com is the site. And you can add that to your considerations. People get very passionate about this energy discussion. I'm just interested. I don't think there's a one size fits all thing here. I just don't. I am of the mind that, hey, if you want to not have, you know, your furnace belching out whatever it belches out when you burn natural gas, and you want to put a solar panel on your house, more power to you. I don't think anybody should be criticized for that. As a matter of national policy, it's much more complex, and I don't know. So I take a little bit here and there, and we try to learn about it. And that's the scoop. You can weigh in on that or anything else if you'd like when we come back. 608-752-4000 and your talk show on WCLO.
I'm Hannah, Queen of Hollywood.
Cedar Crest, Rock County's preferred choice for senior living, invites you to enjoy a free performance of Hedda, a one-woman musical comedy starring Jillian Gabriel on Friday, October 12th at 2 p.m. Hedda Hopper, the iconic gossip columnist, actress, and political pundit, had over 32 million readers during the McCarthy era. Hopper was known for her smear campaigns against Charlie Chaplin and other alleged communist sympathizers in Hollywood at the time. Following the free performance, attendees will have the opportunity to view Cedar Crest independent apartments. Call Ben at 373-6304 to RSVP for the October 12th performance, or visit their new website, cedarcrestlife.com, for details. Cedar Crest, home happens here.
every Culver's Butterburger is made with fresh Midwest-raised beef, never frozen and always seared to perfection. No matter your favorite, the Cheddar Butterburger, Culver's Bacon Deluxe, Mushroom and Swiss, Sourdough Melt, or the Culver's Deluxe. Order it as a single, double, or triple, and they'll build the perfect burger just for you. After all, it's the burger that made Culver's famous. Taste the cook-to-order difference at your locally owned, community-minded Culver's of Janesville, Newville, and Beloit.
Rain or shine, but they hope for shine. More than 100 vendors offer local produce, organics, baked goods, honey, jams and jellies, plants, fish, meats, cheese, flowers, and so much more. At the Beloit Farmers Market every Saturday now through October. Live music, too. Shop in an amazing open-air market in the heart of downtown Beloit. The Beloit Farmers Market has been an award-winning community tradition for years. Come join the fun every Saturday and watch for special events throughout the summer. Details at downtownbeloit.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Stiles from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Good news. Me and the other guys are taking the show on the road.
Get ready for Who's Live Anyway? The hilarious songs and improv comedy you love live.
And as usual, nothing is planned. We make it up as we go, including flights and hotels. So if you've got an extra room at your place.
Who's Live Anyway? Friday, October 5th, on stage at Coronado Performing Arts Center. Tickets are on sale now at the box office and Ticketmaster.com.
We just need the one room. We're very close.
The Janesville Farmers Market is Rock County's largest vendor-grown market, featuring local produce, meats and cheeses, baked goods, plants, flowers, jewelry, art, and much more. Visit the market Saturdays from 8 till 1 on Main Street. Sponsored by SSM Health.
Hi, this is Britton with The Venue. Visit downtown Janesville today and check us out for your next event. Online at thevenuejanesville.com.
Where historic events happen.
In downtown Janesville.
Heading out of town? Stay in touch with the WCLO app for your smart device. Instant access to news headlines from WCLO.com, plus WCLO's on-air programming whenever and wherever you want. All powered by the Boucher Automotive Group of Janesville.
When you need to know.
All right, hold on.
WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.
Friday in progress. This always wakes people up when we talk about energy policy. And that's okay, because we're the only ones talking about it right now, so we might as well talk about it. Ken texts in, around the world, there are literally almost entire countries that rely on nothing but wind, solar, and hydro energy. To say the savings, to say the savings, I'm going to say, aren't there, is false. It is not more efficient or economic is a false statement itself. Lynn says, I would like to hear from someone on the other side of the energy debate. This person's quite extreme. I don't know that I'd characterize them as extreme. You got people that that talk about this in both ways. And, you know, for Norm's side of the debate, there's another side of the debate. And Lynn, I would love to find those people. They're harder to find, the experts. But I will assign Tom to do some digging. Because, as I said, I don't necessarily see the issue. It's why I asked Norm the question. What? We do it. It's a little more extensive. You add it to the thing. I personally believe that, you know, all the... products are generally not able to be push marketed. Cost still drives most purchasing decisions by Americans. And if it's cheaper to produce it in a less efficient, more polluting way, whether it's the right thing to do or not, it seems that as Americans, by and large, that's what we want. If there were two gas stations, one, on one side of the street, Tom, was from an oil company that was operating with no subsidies. Everything they did, hallelujah, was true capitalistic in its nature. And they didn't have any tax credits. They didn't have any subsidies. They didn't get any help building their pipeline. They had to pay for it themselves. And by virtue of that... they were clear of mind to say, we are going to be as environmentally friendly as possible. We're only going to move this product in the safest way possible. We're only going to all these, and they were basically the most responsible oil company on the face of the planet. And then you had across the street any one of the ones that exist now and exactly the way they exist now. Gas is going to be higher priced at our, you know, really pristine gas company's station by probably quite a bit because of the federal subsidies that are involved and the tax credits and all, you know, all the help they get. My guess is, and it's just a speculation, but my guess is even though that's the more responsible company operating on its own, not taking any taxpayer money to get done what it's getting done, because it can't compete against the dollar a gallon cheaper gas across the street, it immediately goes under. Or, in the case of this discussion, never gets developed in the first place. So you have people at the federal government that always think they're doing us a favor by getting involved. And it's part of what's wrong, in my opinion, with the whole idea of capitalism in this country now anyway. And it figures into the energy discussion as well. Why don't we, you know, why don't we just let everybody do it on their own? Well, because the American, Tim, if we took away the gas subsidies, the price of gas would be $7 a gallon. Well, it is in some other countries. I mean, it is. And when it happened, and we almost saw it here, except that things leveled out for a lot of various reasons. When it happened, people's behavior started to change. Remember when gas went up to 4.25 a gallon or whatever it got to here? And SUVs were just sitting on the lots of all the car dealers and everybody was panicking. We're ramping up production of all these small cars and they were selling like hotcakes. And then gas prices came back down to $2 a gallon and everybody forgot what happened. And energy is not much different. If you have the ability to pay 6 cents a kilowatt hour for gas generated by a coal power plant or 12 cents a kilowatt hour for gas generated by for power generated by a solar plant, I know there are some of you out there that are staunchly whatever, and I applaud you. But by and large, evidence says America is going to choose the cheaper one because they don't. It's hard to see the direct impact of the negatives. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, no matter who I bring on, half of you are going to be upset. I've come to terms with that, as much as I don't like it, that I can't please you all the time. So I'm sorry to those of you who did not like our guest, but he's gone, and now you can weigh in. John, good morning.
Morning, Timothy. You stole my thunder on my first question, that being the true price of gasoline, what it would be without the subsidies.
Yeah.
You know, the U.S. military having shadowing submarines in the high seas coming out of the Straits of Hormuz, coming over here, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, it was between $6 and $7 a gallon. Now I think it's probably up to probably 9 or 10. The subsidy. What do you do with the nuclear waste? If nuclear waste is so good, Norm, we've got a decommissioned nuclear plant up at I think around Manitowoc or something like that.
Yep, three.
That the nuclear waste.
Yeah.
Nuclear waste is in barrels sitting out to the side. Fenced off area, and I think that area up there is having a problem with cow excrement not being able to filter down into the ground. What happens if those barrels split and flow over the ground and right into the Great Lakes, into our dear Lake Michigan?
Yeah.
And now we got a president that is easing the EPA regulations, and they're starting to dump coal ash into rivers that people downstream use for their drinking water.
Yeah, well, and you no doubt heard about the story with the flooding in North Carolina and the coal power plant there. That's now there's a big coal ash pit that's in danger of being flooded out and being sucked into the water system. So it's certain that. There are downsides to a lot of the energy alternatives, and it doesn't seem like there are as many downsides to some other alternatives that are out there. And that's why I say to me, let them be. I don't have any trouble with people that want to use that or want to work towards it. I do have trouble on both sides of the coin where we're subsidizing it and not making it stand on its own because then it's artificially propped up. And our current system, as it is artificially propped up as well.
And also, what about the fracking that's going on out in the Dakotas? It's right over the top of the Ogallala Aquifer now.
Well,
Ogallala Aquifer runs from the Dakotas all the way down into Oklahoma, and they're fracking in Dakota and picking up earthquakes now since they started fracking.
Way big amounts of earthquakes. And John, I appreciate the call. I personally, we're energy independent. At what cost? And you don't hear a lot about it. If you do it, you just Google it. It's out there. It's not getting picked up by the big media. And you could argue, well, why not? Wouldn't this be a progressive sort of media sort of story? I would think it would. But for whatever reason, it's not. The amount of earthquakes, tremors, and they don't consider them serious because they're not real earthquakes. Well, wait a minute. Of course, they're man-made as opposed to being an actual fault like there. But don't you stand the risk of creating a fault on your own? I don't like a lot of the stuff that we're doing when it comes to that. Technology is, a dangerous thing in the hands of the wrong person. And we know that here for sure. Dave, before the break. Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, I'm more expertise in the power production side of it. And I agree with everything that gentleman said that wrote the book. I'm of an age that I don't remember his name, but I was in the power business for a utility company my whole life, and everything back then up to now is still all about money. They talk about the solar and the wind and all that. Well, our own federal government is our own worst enemy because of the fact that every single megawatt of power that comes out of any other way you want to produce it, the federal law says they have to have it backed up with what they call spinning reserve. So in other words, they have to have it there anyway. And it was then, when they first started the big push in this country on nuclear power, they sent us to school for no other reason but to tell the general public what they wanted us to tell them. And every single class I was in, the first question I asked was, what do they do with the waste? Mm-hmm. And never, ever, they showed us a little tiny button they had on a card, and this is for some, represents the waste in so many megawatts. But, and this is strictly my opinion, sure, they put the cart before the horse. They should have had them figured out what to do with the waste before they ever came online with the first nuke plant.
Well, from your lips to God's ears there, Dave, I appreciate the thought, and I would agree that, we do rush forward with technology. In many, many, many cases, we're out, way in front, wielding it all around like we're masters of the universe, and then we find out that we have all these unintended consequences, like nuclear waste, and what do we do with it, and we don't have a good answer. And now we're already become dependent on the technology to a degree, so it's hard to back out of it. We could spend a little more time researching all those things. I think that would do us all some good. Appreciate the call, Dave. And yeah, I did see something else about that whole spin up. That basically, you got a national energy grid. You can't have parts of the country blacking out. So if one day the wind stops blowing or the sun stops shining, there has to be enough reserve power somewhere to send to that area of the country. And the grid is a complex and, quite honestly, as I understand it, aging and very delicate thing at these days. 608-752-4000 if you'd like to weigh in when we come back on your talk show, NWCLO.
Hi, Scott Walker here. With all the attack ads these days, it's easy to forget all the progress we've made. This year, more people are working in Wisconsin than ever before. Unemployment has gone from 9.3% in 2010 to a record low 2.8% in 2018. We eliminated a huge budget deficit, and property taxes are lower than when we started. Our reforms help put more money into the classroom, and they reward the best and the brightest teachers. In fact, Wisconsin now ranks as one of the best states in the nation for our schools. Tony Evers? Well, he wants to increase government spending by over $2 billion. And to pay for it, he'll raise property taxes and income taxes. Heck, he's even said he's open to raising the gas tax by as much as $1 a gallon. And that would put our jobs at risk. Wisconsin is working. We can't afford to turn back now. Paid for by Friends of Scott Walker.
Jeep Adventure Days is in full swing at Frank Boucher Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Janesville, and they want to welcome you to the Jeep family. Come in and check out the newly designed Jeep Wrangler JL. They've got models in all sizes to fit your budget that you're sure to love. They've also got incredible lease offers. Lease a 2018 Chrysler Pacifica for $339 per month. Or how about a style in 2019 Jeep Cherokee Limited 4x4 for $249 per month. This month, as an added bonus, they'll throw in a case of steaks or a $100 gas card with your purchase or lease. Your choice. At Boucher, they ride with you every mile. Visit Frank Boucher Chrysler Dodge Jeep in Janesville at Highway 26 and I-90 or online at frankbouchercchrysler.net. Tax, title, license, and service fees extra ends at month end. Verifiable retail value of $100 for steaks and $100 for gas gift card. Cannot be combined with any other giveaway offer.
Save big this autumn season during Menards' Fall Catalog Sale. Menards has the blocks you need to create your ideal backyard. Whether it's a spacious patio, a stunning fire pit, or a sturdy retaining wall, there's no limit to what you can create with so many styles and options to choose from. Lakewood retaining wall blocks are just $1.99 each. Get Lakewood extra large blocks for $2.99 each. Sale prices are good through September 22nd during Menards' Fall Catalog Sale.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, this is Jordan from K&W Greenery, and it's that time of year again. Time for our big fall sale. This Saturday and Sunday, we have all trees at 50% off. Perennials are half off. Bulbs are 25% off. Houseplants are 25% off. Patio furniture is half off. And that's just to name a few. And make sure to bring your passports to K&W on Saturday from 9 till noon for the Great New York Trip Giveaway. 7 days of unforgettable sights and sounds await the winner of this deluxe motor coach tour adventure. Come early and have your passports verified and shop K&W's amazing sales. The winner of the trip will be announced at noon. There's still plenty of time for you to get in on the chance to join WCLO and Van Gelder Tour and Travel on a trip for two to New York this November. So much to win and save this weekend at K&W Greenery, Highway 14, Janesville.
K&W Greenery.
No one works harder to help you achieve your goals.
We know how challenging and rewarding farming and this way of life can be.
You won't find financial experts with more ag knowledge and deeper rural roots. We grew up here, and many of us are farm kids through and through. So whether you have 1 acre or 1,000.
Whether you're building a house or a legacy.
Your friends, family, and neighbors at Compeer Financial have your back.
And we're ready to champion rural together.
Learn more at Compeer.com. Compeer Financial, Equal Credit Opportunity Lender.
All radio commercials are not alike. Trust your radio marketing to the station with 4 commercial awards from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. Click the advertise link at WCLO.com to learn more about advertising on WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.
Friday. I hate waxing philosophical on Friday, but part of this is we're all entering this conversation in the middle of something that, you know, we didn't have anything to do with starting or ending, or and we're trying to figure out again how to put the genie back in the bottle to a large degree. If there were no electricity, we wouldn't be having any of these conversations. Well, Tim, we need electricity. Well, of course you do today. But what if we'd never invented it? Or what if when we invented it, we had the foresight to see that people would really like it, and we'd have to create more of it. And how would we do that? And we had to burn all this stuff and belch all this stuff into the atmosphere, and that didn't seem very responsible. So maybe we shouldn't do it. So maybe we shouldn't go forward with our invention. Somebody, at some point, way in the past, way before us, said, "Hey, I can make more money if I can work during the dark instead of during the light only. Electricity is a good thing. Look it. I can hire another shift. More people get jobs. That's a good thing. Yay." We always have this back and forth. It's part of society. We just not want to pick apart the other guy. And as it relates to energy policy, I guarantee you that there's downsides to every piece of energy production out there, because I tend to believe we've been screwing things up and then trying to rectify them since the dawn of man. I don't even care right now whether you ascribe to evolution or creation, but the world generally went along just fine by itself till we got here. And whether you believe that was 6 days or 600 billion years or what, that's still the evidence. Everything was going along fine till we got here. And now we start fighting with ourselves over what we're supposed to do or what we're not supposed to do. You want to put solar panels up? I say more power to you if you've got the money. And if you can't afford it, that's the thing. The bulk of people probably out there listening right now, the idea of making a, I have no idea what they cost you, Tom, anymore. I don't know. The idea of making a $2,500 investment to put solar panels on your roof so that your energy bill goes down from $150 a month to $50 or whatever impact it would have, they just don't have it. And so if we think it's a good thing, then we say, well, that's not really good. Can we find a way to, you know, make that happen? And we subsidize it, and we pass laws to say, oh, yeah, we'll get a bunch on there, and then a bunch of people will be saving money, and then they'll make the economy better, except then that money goes somewhere else, or it goes in the pockets of the builders of whatever technology is out there. As I said to Tom in the break, I am not a giant fan of talking about energy policy because it's one that seems to upset everybody. And all I would offer from little old me is I think we ought to be good stewards of the earth, and we ought to be able to do the best we can individually. And if we were all doing that individually that became collectively, we might find our way into what's the best choice for what's out there. But I don't know.
So I have some numbers here. This is from solarpowerauthority.com. This is from April of 2016. At the time of this writing, the installed cost of solar panels was between $7 to $9 per watt. A 5-kilowatt system would cost around $25,000 to $35,000.
Okay, way more than I thought.
But there are rebates that subsidize as much as 50% of the cost. A system that costs $18,000 has a payback period of about 20 years.
Yeah, and I knew the payback period was long, and that's, you got to be in it for the long haul, and we all should be in it for the long haul. I mean, we used to be a generations of people that wanted to make it a better generation for our kids, and I think we're losing some of that too. You know, we look much more at the short term and how today and tomorrow look rather than how the next 10 years look. But anyway, we're not gonna solve that one. There's some I've been content to just realize we're not going to solve, and that's one of them. A few minutes left here. Stacey Bodner's in on the other side of the top of the hour, so if you want to weigh in on anything else. Actually, let me go back to a text that came in that was at that point, not on the topic we were at, and I skipped over it, and Dan, I apologize, but it says, the Milton Courier had a picture of a swim meet at the pool with six teams, parents, and opened it up to the public to show how crowded it is. Six teams plus parents plus the public, any pool would be crowded. Cramming it down my throat again, enough is enough. This is obviously a person who disagrees with the idea that they need to do anything up there, or at least doesn't like the current referendum spending plans up in Milton. And I'd simply say to any folks that don't like it, you need to stay involved and engaged. Education is a difficult thing, and we certainly don't like to be challenged by our original beliefs. So if you don't want to open your mind to certain possibilities, then you won't. But by and large, hopefully enough people do, and those are the people that vote, and that's how these things end up getting passed if they do, or not passed if they don't. Part of this is, you know, our own doing up there in Milton or anywhere. The reality of those types of presentations when they say, well, we've got overcrowding. What's overcrowding? How bad is overcrowding? So what if there's overcrowding? There's a lot of subjective nature to this that you can only go to, and the average person doesn't have time to research this. So you go to the expert, and the expert says, well, we found that if we have, you know, class sizes of 30, that there's not enough individual attention being paid to the students, and we need to have a class size of around 16 or whatever the number is. You know, and if you want to accept that information, you can. If you don't want to, I guess nobody can force you to. But where do you go if you can't rely on the data that's there? And if it's presented to you and you choose to ignore it, I can't change that. But I personally think Milton needs to do something with facilities. I have no idea what the right answer is, but I hope that, you know, I hope that people can get past, you know, the angriness. You know what? If Milton has a swim meet, swim meets are open to the public, and if a swim meet is six schools, then that's exactly the situation Milton is talking about. Sure, when, you know what? When Walmart's closed, it's not really hard to get in the line and check out. it's not always at its busiest, and the same thing with the pool. But at the times when it's critical, if you want to hold swim meets and you can't accommodate swim meets, so then you don't have swim meets, so then you don't have a good swim program, well, then that needs to be part of the discussion. Not all of the discussion, but part of the discussion. Ken texted us here while I was pontificating on Milton. Nobody should be debating the payback time on solar when the government subsidizes projects like Foxconn that have a payback of never. Well, this is my biggest problem. And, talk about it how you want to talk about it. TIF subsidies, tax credits, blah, 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 blah. It's usually well-intentioned people that say, well, hey, we wouldn't have to build a power plant if we just gave everybody a windmill. But they don't have the money to do it. Can we help them do it? Well, yeah, and then we don't have to pay, you know, we don't have to use the taxpayer funds to upkeep this part of the grid. So let's do it. It's incentivized. We don't have an unemployment problem if we can guarantee 13,000 jobs at $50,000 a year are coming here. And that'll help everybody, right? Right. Well, but they won't come here unless we give them $4 billion or whatever it was. And yeah, Ken, I don't disagree. This is part of the... It's part of the issue that used to be talked about from the context of what's government's role and is government too big? Are they sticking their nose in where it don't belong? And I say this because I only know my current situation, and basically the government has been subsidizing certain things and products and businesses and whatever since, for the most part, since I've been alive. But I think, in the purity of it all, I would prefer it if the government stayed out of all that and you had a good idea and you're an entrepreneur and you stand on your own two legs and the product sells and you make money, great. And if you take it and you take the risk and it fails, well, that's also on you, and that's how the game is played. Not everybody gets guaranteed success because the government's here to bail you out. Another text on the energy issue. Our last WPL bill was $68, and $32 was for gas electric meter charge only. $36 was for actual gas and electric. Now, that's ugly numbers. So about half of your bill is for what you could argue were some sort of charges other than the actual energy you're being used. Good for you. I don't even scrutinize mine that close anymore because I don't ever feel like there's much I can do about it. But I'm going to take a look now just to see. And it is one of those. I'm always willing to accept a lower power bill. I always groan when it's higher. But when they come back to me and say, well, we've decided that there's a 2-cent surcharge on gas because the gas price went up and the blah, blah, blah. it's still not enough to make me spend $20,000 on solar panels. And I think that's true of most people. And so left to its own, if you really, you know, as a solar panel producer, you believed in this and you believed that this was viable, you'd figure it out. Figure out how to make them cheaper. You'd figure out how to make more return on the investment. You'd figure out how to make them more powerful so that a set of panels could power two homes. I don't know, but you'd figure it out. And I think sometimes the intent of all these extra little programs that the government gets into actually stymies the actual ingenious development. Look at some of the biggest companies today, and they might be subsidized now. Maybe they're in that too big to fail category, but before that happened, you know, Bill Gates was in his garage building a computer. Didn't get any subsidies. Then they argue, you know, they begin to argue after they get big and fat that, oh, now, you know, we couldn't take that kind of a loss because we'd have to lay off 100,000 people and that'd be really bad. And around the merry-go-round we go. So let's stop talking about it. We're heading towards the weekend. Let's talk about fun things to do, and there are plenty. And we need to get escaped this weekend. And besides a big trip giveaway we've got, we'll tell you about a bunch of other things in the next half hour. Stacy Bodner from Visit Beloit after this on WCLO Janesville Beloit.